Hi, Odyssey fans. I'm Bob, producer of the Odyssey Adventure Club.
And I'm Jesse, editor of Adventures in Odyssey Clubhouse Magazine.
Welcome to the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast.
All three parts of The Cure have been released, which marks the first time we've had a three-parter in the club, and it was a big one.
It certainly was, Jess. Wooten's Alaskan Adventure featured remote villages, horrible blizzards, glacier crossings, and plane crashes.
Oh, the stories were exciting, and the people in charge of making them epic are the sound designers.
Yep. Let's talk with Nathan Jones, Jonathan Crowe, and Christopher Deal about the creation of these shows. Guys, thanks for pulling yourselves away from the mixing board long enough to talk with us today. It's great to have you back on the podcast.
Oh, you're welcome, Bob.
We'll just start by revisiting something that we've actually talked about before, and it's an old radio drama trick for Footsteps in Snow where you use a box of cornstarch. Did you go there for this one? And if so, how much of it was sort of old school?
I did try it, and it does sound like snow to a degree.
It's not quite as cold.
It's not. Yeah, it's missing a little bit of a texture. And I tried to, you know, run it up the flagpole and see if the boys would salute it, and they declined.
Okay.
And so we ended up using real snow that Jonathan had recorded out at a glacier one day.
And just so our listeners know, Jonathan, you did all the sound engineering on part two. Nate,
right.
You were part one, and then Chris, you wrapped it up with part three, if I remember correctly.
That's correct.
Now, what sounds did you record there, and then what sounds couldn't you get out on the glacier that you actually recorded in the Foley room?
Well, one of the reasons that I went out, Jesse, to the glacier was I thought because there was so much snow in episode two, that's where Backrun and Lewis are walking and they go to the crevice and all that kind of stuff. I needed to have the realism of walking in deeper snow.
It's called a crevasse.
I'm from Canada. What can I say, you know?
We looked this up. A crevice would be like a crack in the ground, usually made of dirt.
Okay, well,
a crevasse is bigger.
A crevasse is in a glacier.
Crevasse.
Yeah.
So I thought I needed the realism of the snow and sliding. And I used all that as the base for the scenes. And though it was very good when Nathan fell and slid on the crevasse, it wasn't dramatic enough. So I started there, and then I used a lot of other effects as far as ice breaking and cracks and all that stuff to make it really sound big when he fell down into the crevasse.
I think we're getting close to the end of the glacier.
Good.
The ground here feels different. We'll make good time when...
Lewis! Lewis!
Well, you have a lot of unusual locations in this show, glaciers, airplanes, you've got remote Alaskan villages. So how'd you guys research what those places should sound like?
Google knows everything, so mm-hmm. You can kind of Google in or YouTube just about anything. And I was tasked with the first one, so mine was really sort of the setup. Here's where we are, here's the story that's unfolding, you know, it's all sort of kind of building up for the adventure. So mine was a little more slice of life kind of approach. So I was able to sort of just kind of have a visual representation of what it is I needed to achieve in the audio world and try to convey that as best as possible.
So how did you decide? I know there was some discussion on how the voices should sound in the planes. How did you decide what that would be like?
Well, I think when we initially discussed what the sound would be like for the voices, I was with Dave Arnold and kind of leaned over and asked him while we were in the sessions, how do you want this to sound? So we just kind of talked it over, and he thought, well, you know, basically let's try and make everybody sound like they're over headsets. But then when we got to playback, it wasn't really working. So Jonathan had to come up and sculpt another idea to sort of blend in sort of them sounding like they're in a plane. Because one of the things that you have is you have conversations where people are on headsets and microphones talking to each other in the planes, but then you've got somebody radioing in.
Right.
On the same kind of, you know, filtered out kind of sound. So it was really confusing, and it wasn't allowing the story to work. So
one thing as a sound designer we have to think about is where the camera is. Is our listener in the plane with the people? Is the listener sitting, listening over the radio to the people? I mean, where is the camera of the scene?
Oh, are we there yet?
Wooten, we just lifted off 5 minutes ago.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, are we there yet?
Sit back and enjoy the journey, my friend.
Of course, the outdoor scenes, a lot of wind, a lot of that Arctic kind of atmosphere. Jonathan, you alluded earlier to the scene with the crevasse and the fact that beyond some of the natural snow effects, that there might be some beefing up or some layering that needed to happen. Can you explain maybe what nature didn't provide that you needed to enhance?
First of all, in my mind, I thought of those scenes as looking very gray, and Chris had been experimenting in some of his scenes with wind.
It's interesting when you go through and you're watching a movie and you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. It really sounds, Oh, I know what they're doing now. They basically are dragging a screen across fabric. It gets looped around and keeps spinning, and it sounds very much like wind, as you would expect it to sound like, because we've come to believe that's what it sounds like, when in reality you go outside and it has a much more harsh sound on your ears. You don't hear it the same way that you would in an audio world.
So I took a lot of those sounds, I think four or five of those loop-type sounds, from high frequency to low frequency, and then I mixed them together and kept mixing them at different levels so that there was, it would get louder and softer and just kind of give it that desolate feeling that I was looking for. Then along with the ambience of the actual glacier, which is outdoors, so that helped add to the effect. And then the footsteps in deep snow, it was the real deal. It started to give that bleakness.
How you doing, Lewis?
Fine! We need to pick up the pace. We've lost too much time. It's gonna get real cold now that the sky's cleared.
Well, at least we have the lights to guide us.
Oh, yeah. There were two sounds that I really was wondering where they came from. One came in part one. There was that scene when the plane first hits that turbulence, and it sounds like this.
That.
You okay, Wooten?
Well, define okay.
So, how did you make that sound?
I used some rattle trap vehicles where they would go over bumps and it would rattle the vehicle. There was a show that I did, had quite a few scenes in a bus. And I went to a local church here and got one of their school buses and drove around. And the windows and everything would rattle and give that sound when we needed it for the airplane.
Oh, cool.
And mixed in with the airplane sounds, you wouldn't tell that it came from other things, I don't think.
Oh, that's awesome. And then in part three, Lewis falls farther into the crevasse. So how did you make that sound and make it sound different than when he initially fell into the crevasse in episode two?
It's very interesting because what does a crevasse sound like? I've never fallen in a crevasse.
Yeah.
So I actually used our friend YouTube and found a few videos of people that had gone down into crevasses to see what they sounded like. And honestly, they all sound a lot different. Some of them are really dead. There's no kind of echo or anything. Some of them sound like you're in a huge cave. So I decided to take the perspective of Lewis down the crevasse, yelling back up to Will, who was out there. And Jonathan had already had all the dog sounds and stuff. So I kind of went with the sound of the dogs are up there barking, Lewis is yelling down. And I just wanted to create this really kind of closed in, dire position that he has to try to figure out how to get out of. Just Lewis, trying to create that atmosphere.
Where are you? Are you all right?
I've been better. I'm on a shelf. You?
Yeah, I got a good anchor with my ice axe. Thank God for these dogs. They kept me from following you in. The ice was too hard to self-arrest.
Keep them back, huh?
Well, Dave Arnold, of course, wrote and directed all three of these episodes. He actually went to Alaska and recorded some sound while he was there. How much of that native Alaskan audio made it into the final episodes?
Some of the dog sledding sounds, he was able to be around a lot of the people that did dog sledding.
And some of the barking.
The barking, the dogs. That's always a hard sound effect to get. Dogs are difficult to figure out how to capture properly. And so he grabbed that ambient sum and we were able to use that.
You know, the big sound effects, those are the ones that sort of capture our attention, like, you know, falling into the crevasse or the plane going down. But there are all these little sound effects that maybe are even more difficult that the listeners might not even notice. So what were some of the challenges, maybe the little challenges to these episodes?
I think for me, I really sort of focused on making really great locations. For instance, there's the diner scene.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually Rosie's Diner up in Monument. I was there one time on a shoot, and so I just decided to go ahead and grab some diner ambience. So I've got that in there, added with some other restaurant sound effects from the sound effects server. But all put together, it just sort of adds to that realism.
Mm. As we talked about, I did all the sounds out on the glacier of the walking in the snow. But to get the sound of the jackets and the mitts and also the chains rattling with the dogs, I did that all back here. Nate brought in one of his horse bridles, and I would use that for the dog harnesses.
Ready, Lakita? Counting on you, girl.
I'm coming with you, Lewis.
No, you're not. You'd slow me down.
I won't. And you'll need help clearing a runway anyway.
A simple sound effect can really enhance a scene. And one example stood out to me. There's a conversation in part two where everybody's sitting around a dinner table and Lewis gets frustrated and we hear him pound the table. It punctuates that scene beautifully. Yes, exactly. Just like Chris just did. But there's something that was extra impressive to me. It was not in the script. I mean, there was no note that said, Lewis pounds table.
Dinner scenes are difficult to do. It's very easy to overdo as far as the sounds of the clink of the glasses and the plates and so on. So I asked Master Foley Man, Nate Jones, to come in and help me with that scene, and he did an excellent job. And Nate just did it on instinct, I think, where he just banged the table right there because you heard it in his voice.
Yeah, because the real trick is to stimulate a visual imagery in the listener so that you can have that mind's eye kind of thing. So when you, you know, have a moment of frustration, you pound the table or something like that can trigger that.
I know everyone thinks she left because of my drinking, but that's nonsense. I wasn't drinking much then. The truth is, Logan's mother is an addict. That's why she left us. She loved her drugs more than she loved us, and that's why I've kept Logan away from her.
All right, so what was the most challenging scene that you had to deal with in your part of The Cure? And it may be something you've already alluded to, so forgive me if I'm being redundant, but I thought maybe there's something else in there that really posed a challenge.
I think making people sound like they're outside, that's a big one for me.
That's very challenging.
And how did you do it, Nate?
I just kind of put the outside plug in Pro Tools.
That really makes a lot of sense. Sure, I get it now.
No, there's a way to make people sound outside if you use an equalizer the right way. Some of the things that you can do just to try it out for yourself is the next time you're with somebody outside having a conversation, just take your finger and stick it in one ear and then listen to the person with just one ear.
Tell them what you're doing, though, so they don't think that you're...
It might look a little weird.
Well, yeah, but you know, let them know that you're going to be listening to them with one ear. But when you do that and then really ask yourself what you're hearing, you don't hear a really close, you know, studio kind of sound. If you're outside, you'll hear those things disappear. So the trick is to try and make it sound like that.
Well, we've already alluded to one of the final steps in producing an Adventures in Odyssey show, and that's called playback, which has been fun to be involved in now that I'm actually part of the team.
It's fun for you to say that, Bob, but not for us. So.
Well, that's what I wanted to know. I mean, as you are kind of unveiling this creation for the team to hear for the first time, is it an anxious time for you? I mean, you always seem very gracious in the way that you receive the feedback, but is it something that's a little nerve-wracking?
Well, we've worked on the show for a long time, and we get close to it, and it's kind of like our baby. Mm-hmm. And then how dare you come in and rip it apart and give us notes on that. So sometimes it can be very hard. But we realize that it does all go together to make the show much better. With the help of these guys, it raises the bar.
I don't know if I always think of it as my baby, as more of...
You have a lot of babies at home, though. So
yeah.
You've got enough going on there, Chris.
So I think of it more in the sense that I've been asked to paint a picture. Mm-hmm. And there's already a script and a story there, but I've got to paint a picture. And so I'm painting it the way I see it. And then to have a room full of people that come in and they've already got an idea of the way they think the picture is going to look. And they accept my version of it for the most part. But sometimes they want to say, you know what, let's just move this tree that you painted in this picture a little bit farther over here, because I think that's going to make it sound a little better. And if people don't understand the story that's coming across the way I painted it, it needs to change, because I want the listener to be able to believe the world that I created.
You know, I had a friend a long time ago tell me, you know, you're inside your picture. I'm outside of your picture. I can tell you what this picture looks like from my point of view. I mean, you can't just phone these in. And so you get involved in the picture and you kind of get sucked into the vortex of, you know, what is your show? So to have people kind of look inside the picture and go, you know, this is what I see. I think it can be very helpful.
I think that's great for our fans, because I mean, whether we're sound designers or anytime we present something for other people to look at and weigh in on, a lot of times we have a response we want to get. You know, it'd be great if we just got that rubber stamp that said, hey, this is wonderful. You couldn't have done it any better. But when we ask those questions, sometimes we will get feedback and it may not be what we want to hear in the moment. But it will eventually, if we take it the right way, serve to make it better.
Right.
Thank you guys for joining us today. It's always fun to have you in the studio and get a little glimpse into your worlds.
And of course, now that I'm on the Odyssey team, I do get a closer look behind the scenes. But all that does is make me more impressed with just what you do and how consistently well you do it. So thanks for sharing some of that with our fans today.
Oh, you're most welcome.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Thanks a lot.
The level of detail that those guys go to is pretty incredible. Who would have thought to use a horse bridle in the same show as a real glacier?
You can hear The Cure Part 3 on the Odyssey Adventure Club right now. Also this month, we're releasing the third Drake the Cosmic Copper comic.
Is it true that you let the club members choose the title?
Yeah, it's called No Time Off for Justice. And if you're not a club member yet, you can see a preview of the cover on our website.
That's all for this edition of the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast, a presentation to Focus on the Family.
Visit us online at witsend.org/podcast or call us at 1-800-A-FAMILY. I'm Bob.
And I'm Jesse, reminding you that with God in your life, every day is an adventure.